Hello, everybody, and welcome to our Empowered Self-Care topic for the month of March 2021. We are in for a treat. I have invited someone very special here to share from her brilliance and her wisdom. Her name is Lisa Filotti. Some of you know Lisa because she's been your coach in ERC, or you've done private coaching with her, or you've done a blood chemistry analysis session with her. And for some of you, and many of you have met her on some of our live events because she's given really amazing talks there. She's here today to talk to us about organic acid testing. We get a lot of questions about this. And now Lisa could probably do a 3-day talk about organic acids from a practitioner training perspective. But what she's going to talk about is what kind of gems of information you can actually glean from an organic acid test and when it's appropriate for you to do it. Not everybody needs to do it. It's a relatively expensive test at like $300 or so, but it gives you a lot of insights. And usually we run them after we've run other things and, you know, kind of been working on things for a while, and we want to dig deeper and find things out. And she'll tell you all about that. Let me tell you a little bit about Lisa. She has been a clinical nutritionist for 20 years or so, maybe more. She lives in Switzerland and she sees private clients in Europe. And she also sees private clients through our organization. She's, like I said, an ERC coach, a big in-demand ERC coach. Some of you are coaching with her right now. And she specializes in what she calls the mystery cases, right? She's a really good health detective and really digs into like what tests and what kind of nuances may be happening in somebody who seems to be doing the right things, but not getting the right results. Although she'd love to have a few clients that are just easy, like, you know, truck drivers smoking cigarettes and drinking Kool-Aid, that she could give a few bits of advice to and quickly they would see changes. But that's not who Lisa tends to attract. She's one of our certified nutritional endocrinology coaches. Like I said, she's been an ERC coach for 6 years or so now. And we're working together right now. Her and Annette and I actually are working together right now to really expand the ability for us to offer one-on-one support to people who need it. So those of you who are in Empowered Self-Care really get that option. And we'll talk to you about how you could get that in a later time, how you can get support if you need beyond the Empowered Self-Care and beyond doing the self-study. If you need support from a coach, how you can get that. And there are several options for that. And what else? Yeah, I think that's all I wanted to say. Without further ado, Lisa is going to share her screen and show slides, and she'll turn her camera off because of bandwidth issues, and then she'll come back on afterwards and answer your questions. So without further ado, the great Lisa Filotti.
Thank you. I think I'll just go home now. But thank you for that introduction and welcome everybody. And as Dr. Marie said, I'm just going to turn off my video and I'm going to share my screen. Okay, let me just get my, right, is that, can you see that? You're on mute.
Yes, I can, I'm muted. I wanna make sure that you guys turn your, mute yourselves so that if your dog barks or your doorbell rings or something happens that we don't interrupt the presentation.
I can't move all of our pictures, so we're just going to keep it there.
If the pictures are at the top, if you want to just turn off your cameras for now, that would be great. And then we'll just have the presentation. And at the end, you can turn them back on again when you're ready for questions.
Okay, so organic acid, what are they and why use it? Let me just start a little bit about functional testing. Why do people get sick? Modern medicine knows about diagnosing and treating disease, but what actually leads people to get sick? Before the onset of disease is the loss of function. So that could be physical, mental, cognitive, psychological, emotional, etc. But how do we get on the road to disease? Are there functional changes occurring preceding disease states? And can we measure them? So spoiler alert, yes, we can measure them. The reason I'm bringing this up is that as functional practitioners, we look upstream of disease states or imbalances, and we ask different questions than medical practitioners do, and we look for the root cause. We ask, where does it come from? Can we detect it earlier? What are the functional issues? We'd rather focus earlier rather than later on the concept of function. We're not looking to diagnose diseases. We're looking to find imbalances. And how did we get on the road to disease? And are there functional changes occurring? The relevant question is how best to detect early states of insufficiency to restore and maintain function and wellness. And you can see by this chart that there are initial biochemical alterations with no overt symptomology. And that can cause impaired cellular function. That sort of would be in the subclinical range or in the subclinical sort of realm. And then from that, it progresses, if it's not addressed, to early stage disease, and then finally, horrible things, organ failure, death, et cetera. And this is kind of important because biochemical pathways, they involve a large flux of metabolites. And then we need to be able to see what is happening on a biochemical level before any overt symptoms are actually seen. Asymptomatic people and symptomatic people may have similar lab results for nutrient insufficiencies. It just really depends on their own, physical state. So we're looking to see what's going on at the cellular function. So today I'm taking you into your body and into your basic biochemistry. So what do organic acids evaluate? It provides a snapshot about what's going on in your body. Organic acids tell us a lot of things about the body's many biochemical pathways and physiological symptoms. So from a clinical perspective, organic acid testing is a troubleshooting test, and it helps clinicians to form sort of deeper impressions regarding somebody's concerns or where the imbalances may lie. And just as a bit of a history about it, organic acids have been around since 1909, so just over a century. And a doctor called Archibald Gerald, he was in the UK, and he presented his concept of inborn errors of metabolism. And he had a lot of expertise in childhood illnesses. And so he combined his insight from his treatment or support of kids, and he saw that there was biochemical individualities, and he felt that organic acids were an example of genetic inheritance, and this could be linked to biochemical individual traits. And keep in mind, this is in 1909, before the genome was unraveled and all of that. So more than 100 years later, many inborn errors of metabolism have been characterized. But we, in our realm of functional nutrition, we don't typically deal with inborn errors. So those are things you find in children. But we use that as a very important tool to see, uncover any factors that are driving enzyme dysfunction, whether they're genetic, nutritional, or environmental in origin. So it provides us with an understanding of individuality. And we look at, how factors within the body and external factors may limit metabolic pathways, and it helps us in developing very personalized interventions. Okay. So I think because I'm going to be using the word metabolic a lot, I should say what is metabolic imbalance, or what is metabolism? So metabolism is basically all of the chemical reactions involved in maintaining life. So that includes digestion, transport of substances into and between cells. And there are three main purposes of metabolism: the conversion of food into energy to run the cellular processes, and also to form the building blocks for protein, lipids, nucleic acids, and the elimination of waste. We're big chemical factories. That's why we focus so much on food, because we are literally made up of what we eat and what we digest and absorb of our food. So metabolic imbalances are common and pervasive, and they may underlie many chronic conditions, from fatigue to GI dysfunctions to muscular joint problems, mood, headaches, etc. And just keep in mind, various disease states, especially or examples are diabetes and cancer, they are typified by normal metabolism being disrupted. And so there are many consequences to metabolic imbalances, mainly, or the areas I'm going to be focusing on today, just in overview form, is GI function, cellular energy, mitochondrial metabolism, detoxification, and oxidative stress. So we know, like, from GI, optimal health is based so much in digestive health, chronic malabsorption can contribute to GI dysfunction, nutrient insufficiencies, and dysbiosis. And then dysbiosis can in turn result in local inflammation, which can increase the risk of various, diseases, and starting with, intestinal permeability, which release toxins and macromolecules in the body, making it hard for our body to cope. So basically, those are the main areas that we focus on in the organic acids. So what are the organic acid? That refers to a broad class of compounds that are used in these metabolic processes of the body. And in humans, organic acids are byproducts of chemical reactions. And it's influenced by many things: diet, environmental toxins, microbes, genetics, kidney and liver function, nutrient status, and oxidative stress. How do we, just to give you a schematic, how do we measure it? What are we measuring when we're looking at a properly functioning metabolic pathway? So basically, what you're seeing there is molecule A is converted to molecule B through having a sufficient enzyme, which needs a sufficient amount of a nutrient. And then it goes on down the path. So that's a properly functioning metabolic pathway. So many enzymes are required in order to process, all the chemical reactions going into the body. So without a sufficient amount of the nutrient cofactors, the chemical pathways are not really able to work like the way that they should. So here, this is how we measure actually the organic acid. So when there is a block in the system caused by a vitamin insufficiency, what happens is that the compound A makes compound B, but a smaller amount in it. But some of that is blocked is actually then spilling over into the urine. And that's what we're measuring. Okay. So notice that the molecules B and D downstream are also effective, and you should affect it. If visualize this process as a dam blocking a stream, very little water flowing downstream, very little water is flowing downstream. And then the overflow is here in A. So that's basically, in a nutshell, what we're measuring. And there are various categories that we measure, we look at in organic acids. So the organic acids that are produced by the gut microbiota, organic acids that let us know about mitochondrial function or dysfunction, and then organic acids related to neurotransmitter metabolism. Then, of course, the organic acids related to vitamin-dependent pathways that gives us a functional idea of our vitamin or nutrient needs. And then organic acids from toxic exposures and detoxification pathways. So you can think of an organic acid profile like an emission test performed on your car. The exhaust is examined to see how efficiently is the engine burning fuel. And so these compounds, these organic acids in your urine reveal the efficiency of your body's machinery, basically, to say it simply. And one of the main areas that we look at is, of course, the energy production, which is the citric acid cycle or the Krebs cycle. And this is how we actually produce energy. So as I was saying about metabolic processes, all bodily functions are powered by the release of chemical energy. So each day, the energy content of the food of an average person could raise the temperature of about 7 gallons of water to the boiling point. Okay. So this energy is released through this process here. And you can see at the top, these are the fats we eat, the carbs we eat, the proteins we eat. And then these are then going into these various pathways here, going into the mitochondria, the citric acid cycle, making ATP, which is our energy. So usually organic acids are formed as intermediates in this process, and they're usually either absent from the urine or present at very low concentrations. Okay, so that's what makes it interesting actually for us to look at it in terms of testing, because they shouldn't actually be there normally. Organic acids, these are the analytes, the different names. There are many, many of them, and not to overwhelm you, but they come from various metabolic pathways. So they're produced by, for example, gut bacterial metabolism, or they may be a yeast byproduct, or they could be a process, or they could be coming from, for example, the citric acid cycle or ketone production. So we can see, depending on what the organic acid is, what pathway it comes from and what it means. So if pyruvic acid, for example, is high, it can indicate high carbohydrate intake. If it's low, it can, for example, indicate low carbohydrate intake. So that's, you know, in a nutshell, basically how it works. And for example, if you look at the citric acid metabolites here, they let us know about the very important function of the mitochondria. So I'm just going to skip over that. So organic acid testing is available through two main labs, through Genova Diagnostics and Great Plain Labs. And they also organic acids can also tell us about the metabolic effects of many genetic SNPs. And I'm not going to really go into that today, but it helps us understand if you have a genetic SNP, is this SNP active or not? So a SNP may result in an insufficient enzyme or cofactor availability. And the reason I'm telling you about the different companies is that they have different reporting. They have different reporting styles. So this is, Genova and Metametrics used to be one company. And so Genova has organics reports, which came from Metametrics. They also have the ION, which I believe David Benjamin mentioned last week or something, that he was gonna do that. But they also have the Nutrival and the Metabolomics. But this is the organics. And you can see that it's divided into quintiles. That's how they report it here. And for many markers, the goal is to be in or around the third quintile. So it's important to know what you're reading. And I'm going to go through this for the people who are on this call who may be practitioners, because it's important, I think, to be fluent in all of the different organic acids, because your clients may come to you with an organics or with an oat test or with a, you know, Nutrival. You need to be able to understand what it is that you are looking at to help with the interpretation of it. And if you're a client on the calls, you know, these tests are all good. I sometimes wish I could cherry pick. I'm gonna go through some differences between them, but sometimes it comes down to cost or availability, or, you know, so there's some individual differences or decision-making there, but they're all good. They're all good tests. So as I said, the organics profile is in the quintiles. Our goal is to be in the third quintile. And if you're in the first or the second quintile, that's still functionally low. And if you're in the upper fourth or fifth quintile, then that is functionally high. And that's similar to when we evaluate, for example, blood chemistry or blood work. And we have the concept of being optimal, which is means high normal or low normal. So that's here as well. Then Great Plains has a different way of reporting. They don't have quintiles. They have their ideal range, which is in orange. So if the marker is blue, like this one, B6, but is not out of the lab range, it may be considered functionally high or low accordingly. That's where the art of the interpretation comes in. Okay, that's where the clinician or the practitioner's interpretation come in. And then there are several markers that have asterisks And that indicates that an elevation of those indicates a deficiency, actually, of those vitamins. I would say insufficiency, because if you tell a doctor you're deficient and they're not familiar with these tests, they'll just look at you like you're, you know, have horns out of your head. So I would just rather say an insufficiency of the vitamins. And then the Genova Metabolomics and Nutrival, their ranges are, you know, they give you the number range here, but they show if it's high or low. And it's, then you want to be obviously in the green, and high or low normal will be in the yellow, and then the reds. Some markers, you know, you don't want to be too high or too low. Right. So those are the main ways. So you'll often see, this is coming from a Metabolomics or a Nutrival, you get these suggested supplement schedule from it's the first, on the first page, basically, of that. And while it may be indicative of a person's nutrient needs, I don't go by that. I just look at it to get information, but I look more at what's going on actually in the test. But a lot of functional practitioners, whether they're functional doctors or they're nutritionists, they just go by the labs that, you know, these supplement schedule. And basically, that's all she wrote. And that kind of, well, then why do you need to go to a functional doctor, right? If, you know, you can also do that by yourself. Sorry, but so I'm just going to go through, and also to go back to this, it's, while this does indicate a need, it's based on the algorithms that are in the test. This doesn't tell you the order that you have to do things or what you have to address first. That's why, you know, it's a lot of the art is in the interpretation and then knowing where to start and how to support people in a personalized way. So this is from the Genova, well, it's Metabolomics or the Nutrival. So they have malabsorption markers, which are indicative of our absorption capacity. So to really look at absorption, of course, I look at a stool test, but it gives me a snapshot into, you know, does this person have some kind of malabsorption going on that may be influencing the sufficiency of vitamins? So we don't have to always go down, you know, genetic rabbit holes. We have to really start with the basics, you know, looking at the diet and are there sufficient amount of nutrients in the diet as a first starting point. And then, of course, there are markers of bacterial dysbiosis. So this is also indicative of bacterial overgrowth in the body. It doesn't tell us which bacteria are overgrown, but it does tell us that, and these are all coming from real test results, by the way, but it does tell us that there is bacterial dysbiosis going on. And you can see that of all of these, all of the markers are high normal or actually high. So for this person, I would say that it's an important thing to keep in mind. And of course, when I see something like this, I usually would have done a gut test or GI test beforehand or at the same time. So Dr. Rita Marie said, you know, we start with other labs first. We usually start with blood tests and doing a health history, and we look at, you know, diet, and we look at, you know, the person's environmental exposures and all of that. But sometimes, as I've come to learn, people arrive with an archive of tests. So you just then, I just look at them and analyze all of them and try to bring them all together. But, you know, in terms of ordering an organic acid test, that's not the first place that I start usually. And so these are yeast and fungal markers. These are actually from the oat test from Great Plains Lab. And these, it tells us about fungal overgrowth as well. So you may have some clients, or you may yourself have had a mold exposure. So these furans, this number 4 and 5, they can be indicative of mold exposure. And it just gives us an idea of yeast overgrowth. I mean, we look at yeast overgrowth as well in the gut test, but sometimes in the stool test, there may be no yeast overgrowth, because the stool test is measuring what's going on in the large intestine, in the colon. But if these are elevated, as this arabinose is elevated here, this can tell us that yeasts are overgrown somewhere else in the body. I mean, maybe if you don't, you know, it could be in the colon, but if the colon doesn't show any yeast overgrowth, then it is somewhere else. So this is the citric acid cycle. This is how we produce energy. And I love it because, you know, you see this visually, it's a cycle. And, you know, it's one goes from the next to the next, and it goes all all the way around. And you can see this person has actually very impaired energy production. This is the oat test way of showing it. I don't understand why they present it like that. You see, the citric acid cycle starts with citric acid. And the first marker that they show is succinic acid, which is in the second part of the cycle, but it doesn't matter. Most of the markers are there. This fumaric acid is not shown in the Genova one. I don't know why they don't measure it, but Great Plains does. And of course, citric acid is here. And this is how, this like the picture I showed you, then this is the graphical picture or image of that. So you can really see this person is having issues here in energy production. So it's quite a nutrient dependent cycle system. It's very needs a lot of nutrients. Right. Then we look at neurotransmitter markers that also lets us know. So we're looking at patterns, which I should have said at the beginning. I look, of course, at the individual markers, which metabolic pathway they may have come from, what nutrients are related to these. But what I'd like to really impart today to you is that we look at patterns, you know, and to see, you know, is this person in a stress dominant state? Does this person have enough serotonin production, dopamine production? And then these here, kynurate, that lets us know about B6. And what's really important on all of these profiles is the toxin and detoxification markers. So, you know, we live in a very polluted world, we're all exposed to a lot of toxins. So how well are we able to metabolize the toxins? And the stearin marker here, it tells us about plastics in our environment. And this MTB here is letting us know about petrochemicals. So this person here is not detoxifying, you know, these chemicals very well. And also, if you look at pyroglutamic acid, which is a marker for glutathione need, it's very high. So this person is not detoxifying well and has a very high need for glutathione, glutathione being the body's master antioxidant. So this is, you know, assessing glutathione need is really important. So this is the cycle, not to overwhelm you with the biochemical cycle, but this is the pyroglutamic acid here, which is being measured in the urine. This is one of the best ways to actually see if there's a functional need for glutathione. And then there are some hidden patterns in the organic acids. I'm only going to talk about this one, but these patterns of ammonia buildup. And that's important because ammonia is a toxin. It's a neurotoxin, and it's very important. So to be able to get rid of it. So there are some markers, for example, this orotic acid, if this is high, it's letting us know that there's an ammonia buildup in the body. But see, this person has, this seems to be okay here, but you can also see it elsewhere. You can also see it in the, you can also see it in the Krebs cycle metabolites, in the citric acid cycle metabolites. And if they are high, it's usually indicative of ammonia buildup. And so, well, this is a different test, obviously, in this person, you can see it clearly here too. But if this is normal, but the other metabolites from the citric acid cycle are high, and if hippuric acid, which is one of the bacterial metabolites, is high, that is indicative of ammonia buildup. And so then the question becomes for me, where is the ammonia coming from? So I would look genetically, I would look into the methylation pathways and the transsulfuration pathways, because ammonia is a natural byproduct there. And if there are any blocks there, if there are any genetic single nucleotide polymorphisms, these SNPs, in particular CBS, to find out if there is something going on there. If all of those things are okay, but if there's high hippuric acid, which is a bacterial metabolite, then it's usually coming from dysbiosis, because ammonia production is one of the toxic byproducts of bacterial metabolism. So it would be very important to know where is ammonia coming from, and depending on where it comes from, it will determine how we actually then develop a plan to reduce it and to get rid of it. So then there are these oxidative stress markers. So this is coming from the metabolomics test. So the metabolomics test that is available through Genova is just a urine test. Okay, so it's looking at urinary organic and amino acids. The NutriVal then has blood work as well. So it has the same organic and amino acids, and then there are some additional things that are seen in the blood. So it's looking at lipid peroxides, which is showing us about oxidative stress at the cell membrane level. And then this 8-OHDG, which is looking at oxidative stress at the DNA level. So we wanted to make sure that our oxidative stress markers are in the green. A lot of times people will have normal. Why is that important? I mean, we want to make sure that people have enough antioxidants, because there's always a balance between antioxidants and oxidative stress. And we want to make sure that we can actually be able to process and not have too much. We want to make sure that our antioxidant status is higher than our oxidative stress. And a lot of times people will have blood work showing normal high sensitivity CRP or any of the inflammatory markers, but then the oxidative stress markers here will be high. So it's just another way of looking a little bit deeper into inflammatory processes. And I'm sure you've heard many times by now that inflammation is one of the root causes of developing chronic diseases. So here are the oxidative stress markers that are available through the NutriVal, and they also measure glutathione. I prefer this pyroglutamic acid, the urine one that I showed you earlier, because this could be, it's not as sensitive a marker about glutathione need, but it also has coenzyme Q10. So this is measured actually, I think in the blood, but I'd have to check on that. But the glutathione for sure is measured in the blood, and it is. But this is still measured in the urine, as it's indicated there. And then the NutriVal also has these additional things that are measured through blood. So you have these elements here, copper, magnesium, et cetera, and then we have the toxic elements. And you can see this person here has really high selenium. So a lot of people who have thyroid issues, whether they're diagnosed or not, they know that selenium, especially the population of people like you guys, are quite educated. So you know that selenium is an essential nutrient for thyroid function. And so maybe we can overdo selenium a little bit. So this test helps me pick that up, because selenium can be toxic at high amounts. And also here, RBC magnesium is a great way of measuring magnesium status. And this person's magnesium status is quite good or high. There's no problem with that, but it just lets me know that whatever supplements are being used are working. Then of course, this person has all of the toxic elements are in the yellow range. You want them all to the left. And of course, tin is really high. So gotta work on that. This is also a way of looking at carbohydrate metabolism, looking at lactic acid and pyruvic acid. So that lets us know about, you know, whether there are too many carbs in the diet, they'd be high. Or this is showing this beta-OH butyric acid, which is a ketone body, if this is high. So this can also be used to look at diabetic people. But in this instance, this person is on a low-carb high fat diet. So this person doesn't have diabetes or prediabetes or anything like that. It's just this person is on a more or less ketogenic diet, and that's what's showing up here. So it's important to know when you're looking at these, you know, what kind of diet is the person on? So then there's some, some markers that are not available in all of the tests, which makes me sort of irritated, but so sulfate, that's a really good marker to look at. That's available only in the organics and in the ion. And it helps me know if there's a sulfur buildup. Some people have difficulty metabolizing sulfur. So, you know, we can think about all of our lovely cruciferous vegetables and sulfur foods and things like that. But some people really have difficulty in clearing sulfur through their body. And so the remedy is just to reduce sulfur for a while. Usually it's people who are on high animal protein diets. So if they switch to a more plant-based or perhaps pescatarian diet, it usually helps clear the sulfur pathways. And then there are some supplements that can help with that as well. But there's a lot of dietary remedies that we can have if we see that this sulfate is high. And then indican is also another marker of dysbiosis. So it lets us know if there's dysbiosis going on. Then of course the OAT test from Great Plains has all these Clostridium markers. There are some Clostridium markers on the Genova test, but not quite as many as the OAT test does. Then of course the OAT test has a marker for B5, pantothenic acid, which we have to kind of more or less indirectly figure out through the Genova test. And then these oxalate metabolites, which was for me hands down the best reason to get the OAT test. But as of March 1st, I'm telling everybody here that the NutriVal and the Metabolomics have added oxalate metabolites to their profile, finally. I don't know why they don't add the sulfates, but they haven't. And then what really keeps, there are some differences in how they report vitamin markers. So this is from Genova. And the biggest difference really is the FIGLU here, which is a way of looking at folate. This is not available on the OAT test, and I wish it would be. They do look at folate metabolites, but it's not quite as sensitive as this one. And it's really important to look at it here because these are the functional markers for the B vitamins. As you can see, this glutaric acid is really high. That's a functional marker for B2, for example. So we can start thinking about things like methylation, other chemical processes in the body by looking at this. And sometimes, for example, FIGLU will be high, but so will methylmalonic acid, which is the marker for B12. And our remedy there is not to add in more folate because it'll cause folate trapping, which is really a situation where the insufficiency of one vitamin, in this case B12, will make the other vitamin inactive or the body unable to use it. So this is where I'm talking about it's important to look at the order in which you supplement things. So if you just look at the supplement list that is given by the lab and you just take everything there and you don't do it in a particular order or logical fashion, probably not going to have much of an impact. So this is the other reason why I like the Genova test. We're looking at all the amino acids here. So we're looking at patterns, and if the amino acids are all shifted to the left, really shifted to the left, that could mean insufficient protein in the diet, but it also could mean that the person has a high need for protein. And oftentimes, as we're working through things and retest again, it may even shift more to the left. And it's not because they have a protein insufficiency, it's just probably the body needs the protein and is using the proteins up. But then there are other markers here like cystathione that gives us an idea about what's going on in methylation. So we can really start to, you know, build a picture of what's going on in the body through these amazing tests. Here's this urea marker as well, letting us know again about ammonia buildup. And this is just the, you know, non-essential amino acids. So it's good to know what's going on there. And so despite the substantial amount of information that is actually available in the organic acids, we can really simplify it by focusing on some basic questions of clinical relevance. So the first being, you know, are there signs of inborn errors of metabolism? So that's not the realm in which we typically work, right? That's where the doctors are. But is the production of mitochondrial energy adversely affected? Are there functional nutrition deficiencies? So functional, you know, meaning, you know, does the body have sufficient amount of B vitamins, for example, for methylation or for mitochondrial function? Is there altered neurotransmitter turnover? Are there antioxidant nutrients protecting against oxidative stress? Is there a high toxin load, and is it adversely impacting on the detoxification capacity of the person? And then are there symptoms that are related to excessive bacterial overgrowth, bacterial and fungal overgrowth? So, I mean, these are the basic questions that this test answers. And so that's just kind of taking a 30,000 foot, you know, view at it. So you can really get away from the tiny details that make up this test to just say, you know, what is of clinical relevance and where do I start? You know, so if you're working with a practitioner, where would your practitioner start? And if you're the practitioner, where do you want to start? So I'm showing you this picture because this is Georges Seurat, who is a French impressionist at a Pointillism school. And the way he works is by these tiny little dots. And so working with organic acids is like connecting all of these dots. So this artist or this system of painting, or this school of painting, they didn't mix the paint, right? They used these tiny little dots to make these beautiful pictures. And organic acids are just a powerful clinical tool. And while it started off as a way to diagnose inborn errors of metabolism, it's been adopted and adapted for metabolomics and genomics, and really key for personalizing nutrition. And when we, you know, on a personal note, because, you know, you can probably see that I'm a pretty much a nutrition nerd, it's the clinical application of biochemistry. When I could see how the Krebs cycle works, and we could measure it on an intercellular basis and look at, you know, cell membrane integrity and diet and nutrition, it just connected diet and nutrition and the systems biology approach that we use in functional nutrition. And it really is a way of using the cutting edge laboratory testing in shining a light on our biochemistry and the biochemistry and the nutritional status of people that mainstream laboratory testing just doesn't do. So that's just really the point there. You know, each person that I work with is genetically unique, and they all have their biochemical fingerprint showing patterns of health and ill health. And so using these tests, in addition to other tests, like, you know, starting with blood work, it really helps address complex complex issues, from chronic fatigue to unexplained pain, chemical sensitivity, digestive issues, et cetera. So the difficult part in clinical nutrition is finding the root cause. And so this really entails connecting the dots to see the whole picture. And identifying the root cause really needs to be backed up by our intuition, our, you know, experience as clinicians, but also backed up by the science, and to help us really personalize our plans for people. So I guess that's it. That's all I have.
Wow. That was so clear. You took something that is so complicated and made it so clear. I'm just so excited. I didn't see any questions come through, but you feel free to open up your lines or comment to let Lisa know how great that was, what you learned from that, but also ask your questions. Who here has had them? Post in the chat if you've had an organic acids test, either one of them. Yeah. Lou says she has. She's got it in front of her. This is not a session for analyzing them, by the way. If you have a quick question that's related to what
Well, I was just curious because she was talking about the amino acids and she was showing a different test than the Great Plains test. But out of the 14 amino acid metabolites, six of mine are 0.00.
Yeah.
And I know it says that it should be equal to or less than two, but if it's like zero, what does that indicate? I mean, shouldn't it be?
As I said, we're looking at patterns. So if your amino acids are all shifting to the left, so they're low, and I know on the Great Plains thing, and even the Genova say it doesn't indicate low protein, but for me, there is something going on there. So it either means you don't have enough protein in your diet, you're not using your protein, or your body has an accelerated need for protein. So maybe there's some kind of process going on that your body needs to heal and has to use those amino acids to heal that. So don't forget that all those molecules in the body are made up of amino acids. So I would just look at your protein status, make sure that you have, you know, make sure you're in rest and digest mode and parasympathetic mode when you're eating, and that you have sufficient digestive secretions, you know, having bitters before your meals and chewing properly and making sure, looking at the chronometer to figure out, you know, how many grams of protein you need in a day to make sure you have that. And then we measure again.
Would it make a difference if it's animal protein versus another type of protein?
Well, you know, that's the question that's been vexing scientists, is like how much protein and what type. And so I think that we all agree that plants are important, and what we don't agree on is, you know, animal versus plant proteins. And I would say if you eat animal proteins, I would say don't, you know, eat too much of it, or use the cleanest source, organic, you know, not, you know, should be no steroids and antibiotics, et cetera. you know, plant proteins are important part of our diet. And as I said, if you look at the research, that's the biggest question that has been vexing people. How much protein and what type? So the jury's still out on that. You need to find the one that's best for you and not overdo any.
Out of the acid metabolites, only one is in that orange yellow range. Everything else is to the left.
Yeah. So you have, you're using, you need to pay attention to your protein intake and status there. And if you're working with a coach, maybe look at that a little bit more carefully, examine your diet and what may be driving that. So that's the issue as well, as what's driving that, you know?
So you're saying that it indicates that either I'm using up the protein or I'm not getting enough protein.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah. And there, for not getting enough, we have to always look at how well are we doing. So you'll hear me like a broken record. Go to chronometer, test, like track for a week or two, see what your intake is. If your intake is low, according to your, you know, height, weight, which it calculates, then you got to add more to your diet. But if it seems sufficient, if you're getting like for you, you know, you probably need somewhere between 50 and 80 grams a day is my guess. You know, if you're in repair mode, if you're in, you know, you're going to need more. If you break a bone, you're going to need more. But, and if you start lifting and going for that big, big old muscle stature, you're going to need more. But somewhere between 50 and 80, if you do chronometer and you're getting 35 or 40, then clearly you need to up the amount that you have. The percentage of the protein that's absorbed, that's where all the debate comes in. In plant foods, they may have less of it, but if you're absorbing properly, if your stomach acid is good, which is one of the things Lisa said, make sure you're in rest digest mode while you're eating. And if you have the right enzymes, you know, if your pancreas is working properly and making the right enzymes to break it down, or you're taking the enzymes, then you should need in somewhere in that range, right? If your body's broken, you need to fix it, right? So the bitters and make sure your zinc status is okay, potentially take digestive enzymes with your food. But if you're not getting enough, that's where you, right? If you do chronometer and it says, well, I'm getting 35 grams a day, this isn't enough, then you've got to up it, right? And your choice which way. But again, if you take too much protein, it's a stress on the kidneys. There's a lot of nitrogenous waste products. Nitrogen is part of the structure of protein. And there's a lot of that waste product which puts a strain on your kidneys. So, you know, these people who tell you to eat 200 to 300 grams of protein a day, unless you're in the Olympics and you're like, you know, massive and making massive, that's going to be too much protein and put a strain on your liver. I mean, your kidney. So, you know, it's all those personalized things that make sense, right? So that's why I'm a broken record. Please, I know you hate it. I don't like doing it either, but track your stuff for a week or two, not just a day, because you might have an odd day. It's overall, right? Yeah, good question. Good questions. Lisa, this was amazing. Who else has questions? Rob, this is, oh, somebody asked if you've done one of these tests and haven't good explanations from your doctor and you think there's a lot of good information. Keep your fingers crossed. We're working on it. We're working as fast as we can behind the scenes to be able to offer like analysis sessions. But if not, you know, all you need to do is sign up for one of our coaching bundles where we'll go through all of those tests with you. And you can start with a blood chem analysis because that's where to start to see where some of these imbalances are. And then Lisa or Ned or one of our coaches will get on the phone with you and go through your blood chem to start and say, these are the additional tests I think you need. If you already have an OAT test, you probably sneak that in when you sign up for a blood analysis to do that. But we're going to be working on being able to do those individuals in the future. But then, you know, you can work with one of our coaches for 5 sessions, 7 sessions, 9 sessions, whatever, and get all of these tests run and get them all evaluated. Yeah. Did I say that right, Lisa?
Yes, absolutely.
Sometimes I promise things that we can't deliver. And because I get overzealous, I'm like the salesperson. Like I used to work in support at a computer company and we would just cringe when we heard what the salesperson told them we could do. We're like, I can't do that. So I just want to make sure I don't become the overzealous because I want to, you know, make everybody happy. Catherine.
Hey, thank you. Lisa, this was phenomenal. Every time I hear you, I feel so blessed to know you. 2 questions, if I may. The Dutch test measures just a handful, maybe what, 8 different organic acids.
Yeah.
Could you say a few words about, is there value in just looking at those, and what can you glean from just understanding that little tidbit if you have that test done? And then secondly, I try to share everything that I have run with my MD, my primary, some of which she looks at and thinks, okay, you're crazy. And other things she's like, oh, well, that's, you know, one interesting little tidbit. What would be the reaction? What would be the, you know, how to approach like sharing this kind of stuff on organic acids with your primary? Is there value in doing that? You know, if so, is there a way to do that to get the best, you know, results and trying to be open with them? Thanks.
Well, I'll start with your first question. I was very happy the Dutch test added organic acids. So they added methylmalonic acid, which is a marker for B12. They measure a couple of organic acids for B6, which is very important for hormone metabolism. And then they have pyroglutamic acid, which is the glutathione marker. And then they have a couple of neurotransmitter metabolites, which let us also know there because, you know, of the stress response, right? If you have high cortisol, then you may have the epinephrine related neurotransmitters elevated. So it gives important information about the patterns there. And then they also give information on melatonin and the oxidative stress marker, the one that looks at the DNA level, 8-OHDG. So I think they're quite great. It gives us, you know, it's very helpful. So it gives a quick snapshot of some of the most important ones that are probably involved there and gives us an idea about, you know, we can make inferences there about methylation and things like that. And then in terms of approaching your doctor, that's very individual if your doctor is open or not. I had a doctor once tell me that the tests were basically compared me to a kinesiologist. And so there's nothing wrong with being a kinesiologist, but it's very different. And then I had another doctor who had never studied this stuff. So if they didn't study it in medical school, then it's not a thing, right? They don't accept it. And then it's really hard. So it really depends how open your doctor is and also what would they do with that information, you know, if that helps them with their treatment, if it helps them with any medications they may prescribe or how well you're metabolizing or not metabolizing things, then maybe it's good to sit down. But it really depends on how open a doctor is. They get very threatened because this is a very complex test when you look at it and they may not understand it and they don't have the time maybe to go and learn about it. I mean, I would be curious if I was a doctor and a patient came to me with something like that, I would immediately go and learn about it, but not all doctors are like that. So,
yeah. You know, it's a good point about them feeling threatened and, you know, some of them are open and sharing the information. And if it will help you to get through to your doctor to share, you know, the link to the audio version of this, you know, I don't know how to share the video. I don't know if you can do that, but, or to invite them to come to Shine, because if they do Shine as a VIP, there's extra trainings, one with Steph on the microorganisms and one with Lisa on the testing for gut. So she's going to go into more details, you know, from a clinician perspective on this test. So that's a good way to learn. And, you know, we have training in our nutritional endocrinology program for practitioners on all of these functional tests, right? Every single one of them, and they can get in and do like the first level of our program now. We just fixed that, changed that so they didn't have to wait so long to get in, so they can just learn all these tests. And I think that's going to be, we're going to really be going out and appealing to.
Can I make a comment as a physician?
Yes, Diane, please.
First of all, we're not trained any of this in medical school, and so it's very foreign. Second of all, if we comment on it, we're held legally to the standard of excellence in that. So if we say anything and we don't know what we're talking about, or if we order a test that we're not trained to order, we're still held legally responsible for that. So you're seeing more and more and more physicians who are very interested, but don't have the time to go get another 2-year degree while they're working 80 hours a week. And because there are so many more physicians getting interested in it, I would say if your doctor's blowing you off, look for another doctor, because we are finding more and more physicians that are interested in this.
Awesome.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Awesome. Thank you for that, Diane. Where are you located?
I have a bunch of people. I'm in Missouri.
In Missouri. Okay. It's good to know. Thank you. I really appreciate you sharing. Yeah. Cool. Anybody else? Let's see. I'm looking in the chat. Great job, Lisa. Great job, Lisa. Amazing presentation. Thank you. This is really cool stuff. Do you incorporate this stuff in your practice, Diane?
Really cool stuff. Some of it, but I haven't finished the training, so I'm a little handicapped.
Okay. Where are you training?
Actually, I'm in your SHINE program. I just have not been able to reliably show up because it's during business hours most of the time.
Okay. When you say SHINE, you mean NEPT?
Yep.
How come I've never seen you?
Because a lot of your things are at 2 and 4 o'clock and I'm working.
Oh, yeah. We have once a month, once every other month, we alternate daytime to nighttime. So, and everything's available on video. So that's why I haven't seen you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great. Well done to you for, you know, taking a deeper dive. It's hard. I know when you're working that
much. I work about 80 hours a week and I have 3 kids. And so.
Oh, Lordy. Yeah. It's,
you're my hero.
I'm working. Yeah, no kidding.
It might be a long time till I know what I'm doing, but I'm trying.
That's well, great.
Keep going. You know, that's keep great. Going and just start using it. You learn by doing.
That's you learn hard. By doing. You do.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's
and true. Watching other people interpret. So that's what we have in the functional assessments module. And we're going to add more and more of those. And in our case study calls. So those are good ones to watch because we do go through a lot of the testing. I mean, we tend to be prone to Dutch tests. That's what most people come in with. But it's a learning opportunity. We've had some organic acids too. Yeah. And Lisa's thing for SHINE. So you'll be able to do that, right? Lisa's thing, even if you watch the replay, it's going to be during the day because she's in Europe. So she's on a completely opposite schedule.
That's awesome.
Awesome. Thank you. Who else? Questions?
Okay. Question. This is David.
Hi, David. Oh, yeah. There you are.
I'm getting the ion test because I've had it 3 times before and I can just see the continuity. And then I've done the Dutch test once. I'm wondering if there's overlap between the Dutch test and the OAT test that I might consider the OAT test instead. And then how do you choose between the various providers? And then are there tests with Quest, the standard blood tests, that I should not bother getting because they're already covered by these functional tests?
The ion, if you've already done ion, is good. It's the one that Metametrics had developed, and those were the tests, you know, that were developed by Richard Lord. He was the originator of this, so I really like to use his tests. I mean, that's what the Genova tests are based on, basically. So if you've done those, it's quite fine to continue with them. Genova has a sort of handout where they compare all the different analytes in their all of their organic acid tests, and you can see most of them are available in the NutriVal and in the ion panel. There are some markers that are only in the ion panel, like this sulfate one and the indican one. But in terms of, so if you're doing that, you can carry on doing it. It's expensive, so if you're doing it once a year, that would be sufficient. I mean, if I'm following a complex person, I may do a organic acid every 6 months, but usually once a year is sufficient. And then in terms of the Dutch, it doesn't replace all of those. As I mentioned before, there's only like 5 or 6 organic acids that are measured. So it just tells us the most important ones that are related to methylation and hormones. And then the blood work, homocysteine is, I think, measured in the ion, so you wouldn't have to do that. I'd have to look at what blood biomarkers are, but usually there isn't a lot of overlap. Maybe vitamin D, but those are basically the only two. The rest are not really measured. Normally you don't get a RBC magnesium, or you don't look at serum copper or zinc or whatever.
Yeah, I'm adding like B12 and maybe B6 and D and a bunch of others to the blood test that aren't normally measured.
Then you won't need that, right? Yeah. If you're doing the ion test, you don't need to add
that. Okay, so I should look at my old ion and subtract out the blood tests that are covered by it.
So, you know, you still have a blood chem appointment that you haven't used up yet. So when you get all that, not to nudge you or anything, but just reach out and.
I've got a blood test appointment where they take one person at a time, so it's virus safe, but that's 2 weeks out. And I have my kit for my ion test already. Should I just wait the ion tests and do them both at the same time? Is there value to be like on adjacent days as compared with 2 weeks apart?
You could get the blood draw all done at the same time, you know? I mean, just to get the blood draw done, I mean, you know.
So okay, thank you.
I was going to say the comment about the Dutch versus the organic acid. There's overlap, but the organic acid doesn't touch the hormones. It doesn't do any of the hormone metabolites. So if you're following up for your adrenals and your sex hormones, you know, you're not going to get that in an organic acid.
Okay. If I get testosterone checked on the blood test and then also on the Dutch test, is it worth having that redundancy just to?
You know, sometimes it's interesting to see. I'd love to hear Lisa's take on that, because they are different compartments. And in the urine, it's showing what you're excreting, what you're getting rid of, but also the metabolites of the testosterone, whether it's going down to DHT, which is a more dangerous form of it. So you get to see, and whether it's converting into estrogen, that you get to see on the Dutch, whereas just looking at a serum testosterone is a point in time. And it's usually not free testosterone. It's usually protein bound. So that doesn't even, it doesn't even really reflect the tissue level.
Yeah, I agree. And there's basically no perfect way to measure hormones, and each medium, serum or urine or saliva, measure different things. But the Dutch test really provides a very good comprehensive look, DHEA, the metabolites, estrogen. It's important for men as well to look at the estrogen metabolites, because it's good to see if you're aromatizing or not, or is your testosterone going to produce estrogen or not. And it gives some idea about, you know, methylation status. And then, of course, the cortisol metabolites. So that's really, I mean, the cortisol.
The overall picture. Yeah.
So
okay. just try and get all three of those around the same time.
That would be great.
Yeah, that's the best. Great. Thank you. It's not as important for men as women to be real clear about the same time, just because you don't have a monthly cycle, but it's just things vary from day to day, from your environmental exposures, from lots of things, your stress level. So it is good to compare things right around the same time. Yeah. Good. Who else? We're at time. So we actually have a couple more. So Rob is saying, and maybe you can address this. This is really cool stuff. These tests have to be interpreted by an expert, right? An individual can't build a picture of their health on their own, right? So what is your opinion on that?
My opinion is you do need somebody who is skilled in interpreting the tests. So it's hard to be your own practitioner unless you are an expert. In this, of course, you can look at it and see things. As I said, you can see if you're doing the first page, but that's not that's not what, you know, the right way to address things, you know, just taking, you know, buckets full of vitamins, you know.
And that's why a lot of people address it. And that's even how a lot of practitioners address it. They just go boom, boom, boom. And it's really important to somebody that understands it. But I think it's important for you guys to understand these things. And some of you are, you know, in the ERC program in Gold and Gold Plus can come to our thing on, is it this Friday already? Maybe this Friday, I guess. Yeah. Where we're going to be going over the Dutch test and helping people to understand their own Dutch tests. But it does help. And, you know, with our ERC program and with Empowered Health Self-Care, we're giving you information to help to empower you. But you get to a point where, like, if I had a whole series of those tests on me, I wouldn't trust myself to interpret my own tests, because you get judgmental. I'd probably reach out to Lisa and have her, you know, give me a hand with it. David said, this is a good one to address, Lisa. I read that I should get tests while I'm taking my normal set of supplements. I have an opinion on that. You probably have the same opinion, but I'd like to hear yours first.
Yeah, some tests instructions want you to stop the supplements, but I actually use it to see how well the supplements are working. Especially like if it's a GI test or whatever, there are some supplements that if they really have to stop, it'll throw off the results.
Yeah.
And then those have to be stopped. But I generally like to see how well the supplements are working if you're taking things on a regular basis.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And here's my caveat with that. If you just have been taking random haphazard supplements and you started this one 2 weeks ago because you heard this on this summit and that one another, I would say let's stop them all and use it as a baseline. But if you've, like you, you've been working on this for a while, you have other tests, you always want to see what the follow-up tests for sure are based on your plan. So you keep on your plan, like I said, like Lisa said, with that exception. But if this is your first time ever doing it and you've just been haphazard and you don't really feel comfortable with your program right now, I would say just get off of it and start all over from scratch. That's usually the easiest.
Yeah, it is the easiest. Really, it is. because there's too much of a looking at these tests, they take this for that kind of attitude. And that's not what we're doing. That's why I told you about the metabolic pathways. I never looked at just the first page and then left it at that. I always looked at the metabolic pathway, tried to figure out what's going on, what are the priority areas, and then took it from there. And even with the mitochondrial health, you've really got to do things in the right order and supporting the mitochondria. And it just doesn't work to take
randomly taking, like some people come in and they start with us and they got three pages of supplements and it's been kind of haphazard. Yeah. It's been kind of haphazard. Some of them have been, oh, you had this test done, let's take this. And it's challenging for us to say, well, stop taking, because we don't know what's working. Right. In that case, I would say, let's just, you know, you've been to multiple practitioners, you have a program, let's just see what it's doing for you now. But if you're just haphazard, you know, the summit goer that listened to this doctor say, here, take my supplement. And this one said, here, take my supplement. And you don't even know what you're doing. You just threw them together. Then it's probably best to just stop everything. Right. I always tell people, if your psychiatrist gave you omega-3s, don't stop taking them, because it's for a reason. You know, it's for a reason. They actually were a smart psychiatrist, knowing that there's a connection between omega-3s and mood. So there's practical reasons for that. And you said, how long in advance do you stop? David asked, like, for example, DHEA, will that throw off the Dutch and should he stop taking that and how long?
I always have to read the instructions. I think about, usually it's about a week or 2 weeks, but I'm not really sure. I have to read the instructions there.
Yeah. And again, with DHEA, I wouldn't take it the same day as the test, right? Or the day before. But if you want to know, is your DHEA working? If you stop taking it and you show low DHEA, you don't know if your DHEA was working, right? If you were on the right amount. Whereas if you stay on it and you get tested, you go, whoa, my DHEA is too high, then you know to lower your dose. So it doesn't give you good information if you stop things that you've been taking for a while for good reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, guys, you've been awesome. I hope this was super helpful. Just know I'm doing a webinar, not completely different topic tomorrow night, but it's on lab testing, blood chemistry testing. And we're going to go through five different types of markers or categories of markers to just open up your eyes about how you can do this. And again, I'll share with you tomorrow if you want to get some of the blood chemistry testing done and have an analysis session with Lisa or one of the other coaches, then you're going to be offered an opportunity to do that. Okay. Any other last questions? No, David, the Dutch test is designed to be administered while on hormones. Not necessarily, but yes. I mean, it is. Somebody can come in as a baseline and get it done, right? And then see where they're at to begin with. But yeah, it's a monitoring and a follow-up for, are your hormones working? Yeah, Lou.
If we're doing the Great Plains test, and I'm looking at it and there's blue on either end and then it goes orange and it's yellow in the middle with a line. Is our goal to try to get the numbers on the line in the middle of the yellow area?
It's trying to be, that's the median. So it's trying to be around the median or in that orange range. But as I said, if you're in the blue, which is still within their normal range, it could still be functionally high or functionally low. That's where the art of interpretation comes in.
Okay, because I mean, well, some of them were starred and it said that if it was a high value, it may indicate a deficiency of this vitamin. So if you were in the blue, but above that orange range, it would be indicating a deficiency. So right now I'm below that, but I just was trying to figure out what our goal was. If we were trying to supplement or change diet or whatever, what we were shooting for.
Yeah, you're shooting to be in that middle of that orange range.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, something like vitamin B2, for example, is the one that comes to my mind. If it's high, it means, and B12, if that number is high, it means that there's a particular chemical in the body that requires one of those vitamins to break it down. And so it's high because you don't have enough of it. And that's why it seems kind of crazy that, oh, it's high. How could I be deficient? But it's measuring the vitamin itself. It's measuring a metabolite of that vitamin that vitamin should be carrying through further downstream.
It's that block that I showed you.
The metabolic pathway that Lisa was talking about.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
You guys are awesome. Thank you for being.
Thank you, everybody.
This and wanting to know all this stuff. And I hope this was super helpful. All right. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.